Hi, everyone. Welcome to Domain Sherpa. Thank you for tuning in to the podcast with the best domain name and digital asset content in the world. Today's episode is a down the rabbit hole called On the Dot, featuring Drew and Todd Hahn and Jacqueline Daly of Dynadot, who's now one of the largest domain name registrars in the world, boasting over 6 million domains under management with over 100,000 customers located in over 100 countries. So we talk about Dynadot's origin story, as well as some of the philosophy and the pricing features and functionality that makes them special. We also get into a little side conversation about cryptocurrency and stablecoins and how companies can also consider adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. All that and more is coming up on today's show. And remember, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can also watch the video version at DomainSherpa.com and on our YouTube channel at DS.TV. You can also listen to the shows on Apple and Spotify and other podcast platforms as well. So please make sure to hit the like button and the subscribe button and all that good stuff everywhere that you can and help Domain Sherpa grow the pie. We also integrate our shows with Muse.ai, which provides search functionality for the shows and transcripts as well. So definitely check all that out. And shout out to DNWE, short for Domain Name Wholesale Exchange. It's a trading platform designed specifically for domain investors, streamlining the process of buying and selling domain names to make it quicker and easier. With a community of over 3,500 investors, DNWE enhances market liquidity, facilitating more efficient transactions with standard domain listings, reverse auctions, standard auctions, and soon-to-be-added portfolio auctions, including traffic portfolios. DNWE is part of EW3N, a family-run digital asset investment company based in London, England, that also operates DomainManage.com, which is a global sales platform, and Brandable.uk, which is a marketplace for UK and co.uk domain names. And shout out to Unstoppable Domains, the only ICANN-accredited registrar that lets you trade DNS domains on-chain and access crypto investors. With 3% commissions, at-cost renewals, and hundreds of resellers soon to be integrated, they're a cutting-edge marketplace you need to know about and use in order to get more sales and keep costs down. And for domainers with large portfolios, email Brady at UnstoppableDomains.com and see if you qualify for their free transfer in promo. And last but certainly not least, shout out to our own business, Media Options, the number one domain brokerage in the world. Find out more at MediaOptions.com, where you can also sign up for our newsletter for the best domain names and domain opportunities available in the market every week, and also featuring key insights and other helpful information related to branding, naming, and of course, domain investing. With that, it's now time to get into this episode of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains, so come jump down the rabbit hole. What's up, Sherpa Network? Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Jonathan Tenenbaum, a.k.a. JT, a.k.a. J-On, a.k.a. Sherpa Winfrey, and I'm the host and producer of Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Today's show is part of our Down the Rabbit Hole series, because as we say here on Domain Sherpa, all roads lead to domains, and in the reverse, our work with domains has us venturing all the time into different areas and topics, some domain-related, some not-so-related, hence the jump down the rabbit hole. This particular show was started with our homegirl, Jen Sales, so big shout-out to Jen, and we describe it as a tech adjacent digital asset, pop culture, tangent positive podcast with some domain stuff thrown in for good measure. We usually interview someone or dive into some current events or, again, a specific topic that we think is interesting and we think would be interesting to our guests. Today, we are going to be very domain centric. So for the domain maxis out there in the audience, this one is definitely for you, where we've got some special guests that I'm going to introduce in a second. Actually, okay, I'll go ahead and tell you who it is. It's Todd Hahn and Jacqueline Daly from Dynadot, and I'm going to introduce them with some AKAs individually, but that's what we've got coming up on today's show, and we're pretty excited about it. So let me go ahead with that and introduce my guest slash co-host. Over to my right, I got my boy Andrew Rosner, a.k.a. Morpheus, a.k.a. the Dirk Diggler of Digital Assets, a.k.a. Bob Lee Swagger, a.k.a. Drew. Drew got what I need, a.k.a. every Rosner has its thorn, a.k.a. never going to give Drew up. Get Rick rolled. What's up, Drew? How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing a lot of deep reflections this week. This week is really I'm trying to establish what is my fundamental thesis for 2025 and how to go about, you know, attacking 2025, and I don't have a lot of clarity on that for you yet, but it will be forthcoming when I have it.
All right, well, good. It's good because we will tie that in a little bit when we talk about sort of you know, with respect to Dinah Dot and Todd and Jacqueline about, you know, how would they see 2020, you know, first of all, how 2024 was, how they see 2025 kind of shaping up early, and what are some of the current things, exciting things going on at Dinah Dot? What does some of the roadmap look like? Things they're excited about, both in the domain space broadly and then also internally at the company. So, so I think getting your perspective there will be good. I mean, we always get your perspective on everything. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, so always all good.
Trying to say something?
No, man, I'm not saying. I'm saying it's time to keep introducing our guest. To my lower right, we got the one and only Todd Hahn, a.k.a. the Todd Father, a.k.a. Todd Hahn Solo, a.k.a. Why is the carpet wet, Todd? I don't know, Margot. He's the founder and president of Dinah Dot, founded in 2002 with 5.5 million domains under management, over 100,000 customers in 108 countries. And in my opinion, one of the best, brightest, you know, not just domain registrars, but companies in the domain space. One of my favorite executives and leaders in the domain space. Somebody who I've been trying to get on the show for a minute. Finally, I cornered him in Vegas and said, dude, we got to make this happen. And he was gracious enough to take the time. So very, very happy to have him on the show today. So Todd, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the show. And I appreciate everything you guys do, talk about the industry. And so I'm happy. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let me continue to go around the horn. So below me, we've got the one and only Jacqueline Daly, a.k.a. Jaqueline, a.k.a. Jack of all trades, a.k.a. the Daily Planet. She is the vice president of marketing at Dinah Dot with 15 years plus experience in the domain space, successfully expanding Dinah Dot's marketing market presence, enhanced customer engagement, optimized user experience. I mean, just all the good stuff that you see happening at Dinah Dot. One of the key people to make that happen, overseeing global marketing operations, brand development, customer acquisition, all that good stuff. Hence, jack of all trades. It all kind of worked out. That was really a better AKA than I even intended. So I'm going to give myself some credit there. So, hey, welcome to the show. And thank you as well for being here. How you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. I prefer the Jacqueline of all trade, but I guess we can
okay. Okay. I like it. That's all good. See, we take feedback here. It's totally cool. We'll definitely incorporate that for the next one. All right. Well, cool. Let's jump right into it. Like I said, I mean, this is one of our down the rabbit holes where, you know, we've got different types of shows here on Domain Sherpa, down the rabbit holes where we bring on people that are interesting either in or outside the domain space to really let the audience get to know them, get to know what they do. And obviously for you guys, you know, again, Dinah Dot being, you know, a mainstay in the space, you guys kind of look at y'all as like, you know, good guys doing good work, right? And continuing to have success, you know, for now over well over two decades. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, so let's talk about the origin story and how it all started. So what was it that got you into domains and how did Dinah Dot come to be?
Well, it's this happened back in 2000 and my mom has a vacation house in Mexico. And she had heard about this thing called the internet. And so she's told me, hey, Todd, you know, because I was a computer science background. She said, hey, build me a website and for my house. And so I started doing the research. I found a registrar. I registered a domain. And I just remember thinking, wow, this control panel is not that great. You know, I could do better, you know.
Yeah. And,
you know, I had a computer science background. Applied to ICANN, you know, just almost on a whim. I didn't have a business plan. I didn't think that much about it. You know, I told my mom, like, hey, I'm going to be a registrar. She's like, what's a registrar? You know, yeah. No one knew what I was doing. And, but yeah, I just kind of jumped in. You know, sometimes when you're young and you're naive and you kind of just do stuff, right? This was kind of one of those situations. And I got accredited and I built this site myself because of my background. For the first 3 years, I did everything. I was customer service. I was the accounting. I was the website designer. And I think on year three, we hired our first employee.
Okay.
Got an office.
It took me probably 5 years before I hired my first employee.
Okay. Yeah. It takes a while just to kind of figure out how everything is, right? Like running a business is
figure out where the walls are.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, so, I think it's pretty cool where it's like, oh, hey, you know, I
So, you know, I'm going to build a website and decided to start my own domain registrar, right? It's like, you know, sure, we're going to go all in. And back then it was obviously, you know, a bit of a different landscape. And, you know, so, but I think what's really interesting in the domain space, you see that a lot of companies and platforms were kind of created in some ways by the users themselves, right? And trying to develop something that they felt was something they wanted to use. We talk about Uniregistry, you know, being an example where Frank, as he built that out, you know, was building a domain management platform that, you know, he needed because it didn't exist. And, you know, and then that obviously grew and expanded into, you know, ultimately then sold to GoDaddy. And, you know, it's sometimes that's where those opportunities lie. So very, very cool. So then for you, Jacqueline, what brought you on board? So were you employee number one, or when did you, like, what was
no,
your...
No, I was, I think there were six of us when I started. So I started in 2010, and, you know, four out of the six of us are still there. So I think that says a lot about the team. So when I started, yeah, there were six of us. It was a quiet office in San Mateo, and now we have about 150 employees in the team.
Wow.
And it's just been incredible to watch that growth.
That's so cool.
Can we dig into that? Can I double click on that a little bit? Like, you know, I will say, I'll be the first to say that I am a absolutely terrible business manager. Like, there are things that I'm exceptionally good at. I'm very good at sales. I'm very good at negotiating. I'm very good at getting my way. There's a bunch of things I'm good at. Managing people and scaling business is not one of those things. And for the simple reason that I'm a creature of habit. I do things the way I do things, not necessarily in a very efficient or effective. Well, no, I would say effective, but not efficient way. And so part of the reason we talked briefly about this before, you know, the camera started rolling, but part of the reason I really appreciate Dot is I really like the organic nature of the way that this company has been built, or at least that's the perceived nature from the outside. And how did you go from, let's say, so I guess that's 15 years, from five employees to 150? What are these people doing? I always look at this and I think, like, I could probably figure out what 30 to 50 of them are doing, but what are the other 100 doing?
Yeah, that reminds me, was it? Someone said DocuSign has like 20,000 employees and no one could figure it out. I was reading this online. But yeah, it was a slow process for sure, because Dynadot does not have any VC or any investment. So you're right, it is pretty organic. Like, as we made money, we would invest back into the company, hire another person, open an office somewhere. Or, you know, it was very organic. So that's part of the reason it took us 18 years to get to our first million. But then since then, the last 5 years, we've hit 6 million. So we kind of like built the foundation, and then it kind of...
That's 6 million domains under management.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, very cool.
Under management.
And then... You guys got to update the site. The site says 5.5. You know, you need to do the counter just to keep rolling. But I think it's also... Counter. You know, but I think it's also, you know, and I think that's a really good point to mention that, you know, you guys are debt free, privately held, you know, in an industry that has seen a lot of consolidation. You know, you've got publicly traded companies, you know, so you kind of, you know, continue to operate almost like a bit of a mom and pop type, sort of like closely held, yet, you know, sort of, you know, family sort of oriented kind of business in that way, you know what I mean? And, you know, and I've seen companies like when I was at web.com that we went from private to public, back to private again. And, you know, that stuff creates disruption within the company. And sometimes I think it makes it hard to maintain a certain level of like customer service and things like that. You know, and you guys have kind of withstood a lot of that in your process and still grown a lot in, you know, as you've gone. You know, where have you
seen? All right, can we get back to that? I want to hear the answer to the question I asked.
All right, fine. Go ahead. We'll go back to Drew's quote, which was what? Like, what were the big jumps? I guess that's kind of what I was trying to.
No, not what were the big jumps. Like, what are those, you know, okay, so you got a domain registration business, you know, and all the ancillary businesses that come along with that, with the aftermarket, with, you know, auction, et cetera, marketplace. But so let's say that's, you know, 30 people, maybe 50. Where are those 100 other roles? How does that come about?
80. Out of those 150, 80 are engineers. And,
okay. That's what I was curious about.
30 are customer service. So that's already 110. And then, of course, have the operations team, accounting. We have a legal team. We have design team, server team, like infrastructure team. Of those 80 engineers, about, I would say 15 are on the app, just on the app itself. Like building an app, a lot of work.
That's really cool, man.
And then let's see, we have about 10 people just constantly working on the registry, like connecting to each registry. Even though there is a standard EPP protocol, the way each registry implements it is slightly different. So there's a lot of like detail work in the registry code. So there's 10 people working on that. There's 5 people working on payment processing. Because we support 30 different payment methods, and As you can imagine, each one has a slightly different API. So it's a lot of stuff like that. It's a lot of detail work. I agree. You wouldn't think, right? Because you think domain, you just connect and you just check the availability, right? But actually, all these details add up, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. The engineering staff, that's interesting, too. I mean, I saw mentioning the web.com, they had 250 probably engineers at some point, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Which was almost like maybe half the staff or whatever. I forget the exact numbers. But yeah, I mean, you realize obviously as a tech company, a digitally based business, but are a lot of you guys still based in California? Or are you now pretty distributed and remote? Like, how are you guys?
We're pretty distributed. We stopped hiring in California because we couldn't afford, because we're a low margin business. Yeah. Like we make I don't know, like, on average, 8% margin on a registration. Com, it's even less. It's maybe 4%. So we don't make a ton of margin. So we have to keep com. So because the Bay Area is so...
I guess that, sorry to interrupt, but I guess with your recent announcement, that's now pretty standardized across all customers, as opposed to maybe you had some clients that were high margin and some clients that were low margin, and that's pretty much standardized now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Because we used to have pricing tiers based on your volume. Mm-hmm. We switched to give everyone the best pricing. So now everyone gets we call it super bulk pricing.
And, yeah. Great strategy, right? You see the writing on the wall is that, you know, domain registration is ultimately a pretty commoditized, you know, thing. And so, you know, it's the anchor to keep a customer in your ecosystem. Offering attractive pricing is a good way to get customers in your ecosystem. But you got to figure out other products and services to offer them to, you know, generate a margin.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's, you know, commodity markets, as you mentioned, the margin goes to zero, right? As people compete on price.
Yeah.
It's not 100% commodity because some, like control panel matters a little and security a little, but it is, I would say,
absolutely
80% commodity. So yeah, there's constant price wars in our industry. So it's hard. It's really hard to make money, I would say, especially on the front end of the domain life cycle.
Well, yeah. And then the domain life cycle, I think, is a key aspect of that in general, because then you also have expired auctions and you've got your auction platform and, you know, your aftermarket piece and those kinds of things. And, you know, when I ran NameJet, you know, one of the biggest things I think that I would realize that some folks would lose sight of, not understanding the way that domains work, is that, you know, that piece of the life cycle, the expiration and the ability to both, you know, monetize the domain potentially in an auction and then also keep it in-house as, you know, the registration, and then is also important. And we would see names at either NetSol or Enom that would be, you know, would expire, would auction on NameJet, and then would come back into, you know, the fold as a registration at either registrar, and then would expire again 2 more years, you know, 2 years later, and then would run as an auction again. And then, you know, one of the things when GoDaddy would go and get all of the, you know, and eventually they did get the Enom and some of the other stuff, and, you know, some of the other auction inventory, you know, one of the things I thought was somewhat short-sighted on for those registrars is that they lose the registration, you know? Mm. And I think that's obviously a key aspect to it. So you've got to keep the whole picture in focus. Otherwise, you know, you miss opportunity, especially when you're talking about the, you know, the sort of your baseline margins being so low to begin with. So, but, you know, so all good. So then, so what is the focus, like the philosophy, right? And Jacqueline, I'll kind of pivot to you, you know, so when the company, when you guys are putting yourself out there as what your brand is and what your identity is to the customers and the, in, you know, the industry and domain space at large, like what is that? What's that narrative? What's that story?
Well, you know, Todd mentioned we have over 80 engineers. So I think technology is kind of the backbone of Dynadot. And not just building things to build things. We have really open conversations with our customers and build things that they actually need. Because we're not domain investors. I think maybe Todd has a dozen names, but we don't really understand that market as well as the customer does. So, you know, you can reach Todd on Twitter and have a conversation directly with him. Our account managers are constantly talking to our portfolio holders, and we're building features that people actually want. And so, you know, we have a lot of customers actually actively involved in the creation of these tools, because at the end of the day, that's been the success. That's why we have such a powerful control panel, because it's built on what people requested. And so we actually take the time to listen to the customers and create the Dynadot that they want to use. And I think that's kind of been our secret sauce, is just to listen and implement well.
Yeah, I love that. I got to move some names over, you know, so I think that's going to be,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, I'm gonna get myself in a bunch of trouble here, but, you know, I've actually, it's been a pretty serious consideration for me, in the last, 6 months, I would say, I would actually, I think I am pretty much prepared to move our whole portfolio over to Dynadot for the most part, because it's just become untenable. There's just a lot of problems I'm seeing at GoDaddy, that just don't get addressed, and, strange things that just things not working that you think, I don't understand. But I guess, you know, it's just that classic issue of being tied to legacy code and, you know, legacy databases that are just difficult to update, I think. And I don't know, there's, you know, some great innovation coming out in the aftermarket space, but, you know, the core nuts and bolts of trying to manage my portfolio is like just, oh, painful. And you guys have a very elegant dashboard. Your control panel is just, it's very elegant, and it really addresses the needs of domain investors. Which is ultimately,
we have quite a few tools specifically for domain investors. I think one of the most basic ones is our watch list, which you can just put domains in there and it'll just track it for you. Like if it's registered, it'll tell you when it becomes unregistered or available at auction or drops. If it's not registered, it'll tell you if someone registers it. Yeah.
Does it track name server updates?
It does, actually. Yeah. It tracks name server updates.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm.
And are those like radio buttons? Can you say, I want to, you know, which variables of a domain name you want to track, or is it just sort of standard?
I think right now it tracks everything and it just emails you a change, because there's not that many changes in the domain lifecycle. Like people aren't constantly changing their name servers.
Yeah, most of the time.
But if that becomes a problem, like you get spammed, we can add, like, just update me once a month or something. We can add that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the control panel is built for people with a lot of domains. We have bulk updates.
Yep.
You can list up to 5,000 domains at a time through your control panel. And it's still pretty fast. Everything's pretty optimized on the back end.
I think the easy, like one of my favorite features personally, is just the ability to manage name servers so effectively with, like, you know, preset name servers that you can just drop down and select from all the, you know, the most common marketplaces and name servers that people are trying to point their domain to, right? And that just makes it so much easier. and you don't end up with mistakes in your name servers, and you don't end up with non-resolving pages. And there's a lot to be said for that. And it also allows for testing, right? It makes it easier to just say, okay, I'm going to take these 100 names, I'm going to go test them on this, and then I'm going to move it over here. And it makes a big difference. There's so many things that I just opt out of doing that I know would have been productive with my portfolio, simply because it's too much of a hassle. It's too much of a time suck to go and update names. And anyways, it's I take my hat off. I think you guys are doing a great job with just those, you know, it's not something that people want to like write home about, but it's actually the stuff that makes your day easier. It makes everything a little bit more efficient in doing what it is we do. And you guys have been pretty conscious about making those updates and adding those features, and it's definitely appreciated.
Yeah. I can relate to you, just like typically how a feature gets implemented. Usually it's someone on Twitter complaining like, hey, Todd, like this is not working, or hey, why don't you do this?
Yeah.
And that's kind of new for you, right? Re-engaged with Twitter in the last year to, you know, year and a half or so.
It's been a year and a half, and man, I should have joined sooner. It's such a pleasure.
It's the only place to be.
Exactly. Of course, I get complaints and stuff. Actually, I welcome feedback, good and bad. But it's nice to just have those conversations. And I feel like even though we were already pretty reactive, like it takes us to a new level of kind of listening. But, you know, when I get a complaint, what I do literally is I just screenshot that complaint and I just send it to our designers. So it's like a direct conduit to our product team, you know, Twitter basically.
That's great.
It is very fast.
And what's your, I mean, obviously each thing has a different timeline because of sophistication and complication and integration, but what's your general, you know, you get some feedback about, say, a moderate feature improvement or addition. What's the turnaround time usually from, hey, somebody's complaining, to I'm sending this over to the design team, to, okay, now the engineering is implementing it?
Yeah, just last week, someone asked me for a new sortable. There's a column in one of our tables, and they wanted a sortable. Okay. And they got that done in a week. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the engineers are pretty effective. Our code base is clean, too. I think that's something that, another thing that is not exciting or flashy, but having a clean code base is actually extremely important for any tech company. And so we spend the time to like clean up legacy,
trim the fat,
old code, whatever. So that's a lot of work that is easy to skip, I would say, but we actually do it, and it's not glorious. It's not glamorous. I mean, it's a difference long-term. Yeah.
No. And I think that absolutely, I mean, when technical debt is like an iceberg, right? It's like, you know, it's a lot. And I've seen it with some of the legacy companies that, you know, I've been at where, you know, cause
where it was the opposite, where I'd email JT when he was at NameGen. I'd be like, JT, you know, you're making it awfully hard for me to buy more domains because of X, Y, and Z. And he'd be like, I know. And then, you know, they'd like eventually maybe escalate it to an engineer. Then they'd be told like, yeah, we'll get to that in a decade. And then,
well, for what it's worth, we had 2.5 engineers, you know, so there's a half of a person running around. And,
so, and the first two were actually just trying to like keep the thing from sinking at all times.
Well, that's what it was. It's a lot of like you're putting your thumbs in the dike trying to stop the leaks, right? Because it wasn't anyone's fault. We actually had some fantastic guys on our team, but it's a lot. And it would make it that roadmap-wise, you know, we would do some of the same. I think that, you know, there is absolutely an advantage when you're a company that can be responsive to your customers' needs in that nimble, agile kind of way, right? I mean, it makes you much different than a lot of others, especially in a space that has a lot of old legacy players that are dealing with, like, again, a lot of technical debt and a lot of stuff that they just can't, you know, they couldn't do it even if they wanted to. They're well-intentioned people, but there's only so much that they can do based on technical limitations. But it would be the same kind of thing. Somebody would complain, hey, can we get this feature? It's like the difference for us is like, all right, cool. How does October of 2027 sound? You know what I mean? And stay tuned, you know, that kind of thing. So I think the responsiveness about that is great. And then as far as your customer base, this will be a Jacqueline question, I guess. So when you guys are, you know, sort of reaching out, you guys are not domain investors yourselves, but obviously a large segment of your customers are. So how much are you marketing both? I guess the question would be segmenting the customer types. And then also, are you seeing geographically any kind of a shift in your customer base as, you know, you guys have evolved as a company? I mean, I see 100,000 customers in 108 countries. So maybe that's like two part, like from a domain investor versus sort of retail customer, how much of that are you guys sort of seeing and addressing? And then how spread out are they?
Yeah, so we're kind of split in half. About half of our customer base is domain investors, and the other all on the retail side. And so it makes it very interesting because they're completely different customer bases that have different needs. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, here we have this bulk robust control panel, but like a mom and pop shop, that might be a little bit intimidating. And so, you know, we've introduced the different amount of suites of our different products, like our site builder, our email for those everyday users. But I would still say like the bulk majority of our customers are large portfolio holders. You know, the onesies and twosies, they continue to grow, but not as quickly as the portfolio holders. And it's not necessarily domain investors, but we have like marketing agencies, for example, that, you know, are actively involved in expired auctions for buying domains with backlinks, and they have huge portfolios. And so those that are looking for a domain management system for more than one or two domains, that's definitely our biggest area of growth. And that's also, we're seeing that growth internationally as well. So about half of our customer base is in the US, but the other half span globally, split between Asia and Europe mainly. China being the biggest section of Asia for customer base. And so
where do you see the most growth?
I think the fastest growing is in Asia and China. And, you know, as Todd mentioned, we offer a bunch of different currencies now. Our site's translated in about 10 different languages. And so we're really trying to support that international growth. You know, as the internet penetration grows in these developing countries, we're seeing more and more people come online, and it's either to create a website or else to monetize domains. We're seeing, you know, expansion of that, especially in Asia. And so we're doing our best to kind of support all these little segments of the market that are at Dynadot.
You just mentioned, you know, monetizing domains, which I'm assuming you mean more aftermarket sales. Is that?
Yeah, aftermarket sales, there's, you know, a lot of traffic arbitrage that goes on, especially in Asia.
So, just, you know, this week, GoDaddy announced that they are basically opting out all advertisers from domain parking. I believe that goes into effect next month, early next month. And, you know, so in order for a company to even display an ad on a parked domain name, they will have to manually opt back into that system, of which I would imagine a very small minority of those advertisers will do so. That obviously, you know, is kind of the nail in the coffin of domain parking, unfortunately, which was already, you know, we're way down from the 2008 levels, which I think was basically when the decline started, also with a change in Google's policy. Do you guys have a domain monetization solution? What do you think? I mean, I don't, you know, do you have any thoughts about the future of monetizing domain traffic?
Do you have a product? We don't have our own solution. For our expired inventory, we use just what everyone else uses, like Parking Crew or Cedo Parking, one of those BOTUS. I will say that outside of the U.S., like in China, for example, they have a different ecosystem for domain parking. They have their own ad networks. And so I would say like arbitrage and domain traffic is still going strong in Asia. It's declining in the U.S. for sure. But like sometimes we look at some of our registrations from China, and you know, a lot of them are still doing traffic stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Now, non let's say somebody based in the United States with a domain portfolio, and I'm fully aware this is not you don't have a parking solution. This isn't your area of expertise. But I don't know if you have an opinion or any thoughts about, like, let's say me, for example, if I wanted to park utilizing that network of advertisers and traffic arbitrage in China, can I get paid out from China? Probably not, right?
I'm sure there is a way, but I would say it's
probably not straightforward.
Not easy, yeah. And also, I think all the websites over there are in Chinese. So there's some obstacles, I would say. But I mean, a lot of the investors in the Chinese traffic, they're actually based outside of China. So I think it is possible. Mm-hmm. There's a lot based in the US actually, but they do traffic in China. So I think there is a way to get the money out.
Okay. There's always a way to get the money out.
that could be worth an offline conversation. So not to get us too bogged down in that piece, but I do think that, you know, that's obviously interesting. Now, as far as listing domains for sale, when you talk about monetizing sort of in a more traditional sense, through the control panel, right? So where can I list domains from my Donadot account? Right. Are you guys integrated with like Cedo or Afternic, or is it on your own, your own auction platform? How does that work?
Yeah, we have the full Afternic integration, mm-hmm. fast transfer, same with Cedo. So from the control panel, actually, this is something we added last year. You can list domains. You don't have to go to Afternic.com or Cedo.com.
Yeah.
List it directly and manage it directly from the control panel. So that's another way to save time. And we also have our own internal marketplace. It's just for Dynadot. It's mm-hmm. not syndicated anywhere, but it's used for a lot of a smaller value transactions. If you just have a domain that's $50 and you don't want to go through some network, like you can just list it on the Dynadot marketplace, and it's a 10% commission, and it's
Is that an auction marketplace, or is that a sort of buy it now listing?
That's both. You can do buy it now, fixed price, and auctions, user auctions. You can do all three. So if you have some domains that are expiring soon, just list it for $10, see what happens,
And do you guys accept payment in crypto? Is that?
We do through BitPay.
Got it.
We're currently adding BTC server, which will allow us to allow you to pay us directly to our wallet. And that's almost done, I would say.
But by doing that, you have to, I guess, maybe above a certain threshold, start implementing your own KYC, which, you could do through API now. But is that an issue with domains? Is that like a...
I don't think we've encountered too much KYC, because most of our market...
Probably not, I guess. Yeah.
Under 5,000, so
yeah,
I don't know if we really hit the threshold.
I'm not sure if it's even required, actually. I don't know that it's really, I think if it's actually just a straight transaction, I don't think that there's any requirement.
Yeah, because we're not
JT, this is your area of expertise.
Yeah, I don't, that's a good question. I don't
know. We looked at this, for something else, I think. Anyways, I was just curious. More and more, I think we're going to see, some significant stablecoin legislation coming in the pipeline. And I think I'm pretty optimistic about what that's going to do for just general e-commerce and allowing for microtransactions, allowing for very, rapid checkout and, adding a lot more fluidity to the consumer internet, the consumption internet, the e-commerce. Of all colors and shapes and sizes, I think stable coins are going to be a big leveling up of e-commerce. And
I love
I think because it just makes so much sense. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, I mean,
24/7, 365. No 3-4% to a credit card company. No, it really smooths it out and it removes so much friction from e-commerce.
Oh my gosh. And the biggest one for a business, no chargebacks.
Programmable. Yeah.
Also, oh, yeah.
Also.
Programmable too, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, chargebacks. Huge problem. Huge problem.
Yeah.
So on your payment processing now, are you guys accepting crypto for domains and things?
They just, yeah.
Except crypto through BitPay. Though but I would,
do you pay out? So let's say that I sell a domain on Dynadot. Can I get paid in either a stable coin or Bitcoin or
I currently know
shitcoin?
Your Dogecoin you're collecting?
Yeah, can we buy that
Bitcoin? not yet, but we're working on that. Yeah.
Cool.
It's
that is another, I mean, I obviously just the ability to integrate stable coins is huge and is very meaningful. But you know, I think, you know, from a domain investor standpoint and many other people that I know, you know, I'd love to just get paid out. You know, it's like, anyways, I'm also radical. Anywhere that I can cut out banks, I'm happy to do so.
Okay. So I'm just curious, you like to be paid out, but in which currency, like Bitcoin or stablecoin?
Well, I'm biased. I may not be your typical profile of a client. I would prefer to be paid out in Bitcoin. We basically, as a company, me personally, you know, I think of Bitcoin as my savings account. And so we basically just sweep all, you know, excess cash, sometimes on a monthly basis, but generally on a quarterly basis, we sweep all excess cash, you know, just into Bitcoin. And then we hold it with Fidelity and we let them in Fidelity Digital Assets manage that treasury. And it's been an extremely successful strategy. And,
not counting actually, the last 24 hours though, but otherwise all good.
No, but it's, yeah, sure. But you know, we're not marking to market. It doesn't really matter. And,
it's not a loss till you sell it, right guys?
Big, sorry, 100%, man. Yeah, it's not a loss until you sell it. Of course, right?
That's it.
100%, right.
That's it.
Yeah, I was talking to another domain investor, and he sent me this interesting article. A lot of publicly traded companies are using Bitcoin in their treasury now. There's a substantial list, and I saw this one company had 15,000.
It had to be Slavic.
Yeah, Slavic. Yeah. Exactly.
I know because he sent me the same list like 48 times. Hats off, Bob. Bob Lyon, my man, yeah, one of my favorite humans.
Yeah, so I know, we're thinking about it. We might keep maybe 5 or 10 in Bitcoin. You know,
I think it makes a lot of sense. I'm not going to get into, you know, what we're holding, but it's been a very successful strategy for us. I'd encourage everybody. I think that, you know, if you dig in and you understand what is Bitcoin, you don't look at it like all this other stuff where it's, you know, speculative casino, where it's actually just a real store of value. You know, we had that, you know, an offline conversation briefly before starting, and we were talking about how, you know, I feel that, and I think you sort of nodded your head in agreement that we're moving from I'm radical and extreme and loudmouth, but I say we were moving from a fake economy into a real economy. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you had a lot of businesses that were based on bluff and narrative and everything was driven by, you know, like sort of the pyramid scheme of venture capital. And it was not really I look at you, we don't know each other that well, but I look at you like my brother from another mother, because there really aren't that many people. I mean, my business is dealing with the most successful entrepreneurs, venture capital firms, and Fortune 5000 companies worldwide, right? That's my business. Those are the people that I deal with every day, all day, and I've been doing it for a very long time. And these are conversations that I'm having. These are, some cases, email conversations, but phone conversations where I'm getting into the heads of these people and understanding what drives their business. How is this domain going to drive a return on investment for them? And as I do that, I've gotten pretty good at understanding which businesses are actually real and which businesses are not. And unfortunately, I would say that it really is like 80% or more of businesses that I encounter, and it's not to say that they don't have a business, and it's not to say that their business isn't meaningful, but it's not what I would call a real business. It's based on the circumstances that we find ourselves in that are the result of fiat mandate and fiat currency and fiat, you know, derived institutions, and it's fake. It's all fake. It's just,
it's based on some expectation.
I wish I had a better way for describing it.
I would agree with you. I mean, before the last couple of years, we had 0% interest rates for 8 years, you know.
Yes.
That's not good for the economy.
No.
And there's a really good saying by Warren Buffett. When the tide goes out, you see who's swimming naked.
That's it.
I think, you know,
there's going to be a whole bunch of naked people on the beach soon.
Exactly.
Yeah. I agree completely. And precisely what you've just said, you know, gets me back to the original point, which was that I think about Bitcoin as a savings tool. I think about where can I, and it's funny because many people would look at Bitcoin and be like, that's fake. That's not real because I can't hold it in my hand. And you know, look, that's a valid point and it's not for everybody. But as we live in a digital world driven by, you know, bits, Bitcoin is as real as it gets in a digital world because it is fundamentally tethered to the real world through the proof of work mechanism that requires energy consumption, that requires energy inputs, and that tethering and the limited supply makes it fundamentally real as anything you can imagine. And so I think about, you know, what can I do? I have an organically built business. I have no debt. I've never had any investors. I don't want debt. I don't want investors. I don't want to scale it, you know, X percentage and have a gun to my head. I don't want that. That's just not the lifestyle that I want. That's not the business that I want to build. I don't want to be taking that risk that when the tide goes out, I get washed out. I don't want that. I just want to have nice, you know, we talked about it earlier, the freight train approach. I just want to keep executing at whatever scale I can, given the resources I have. And, you know, that has been a successful strategy for me. It seems to have been a successful strategy for you. And through that strategy, I generate excess cash profits. And I like to save that in Bitcoin. And it gives me a lot of flexibility. It's the most liquid asset, you know, on earth. I would say, you know, I own a bunch of U.S. treasuries. And as liquid as that is, tell you what, it's a freaking headache to buy and sell. You know, like I can pull out a ledger and buy and sell Bitcoin right now without talking to a banker, without fee. You know, like, I don't know. So anyways, I'm not trying to spend evangelizing Bitcoin, but I think it is a good strategy.
Media Options is the industry's leading domain broker specializing in domain acquisitions, high-value domain sales, and domain name consultation. As pioneers and thought leaders on the subject of the domain aftermarket and domain name value, plus through their clear domain acquisition service, Media Options offers startups and established corporations an unparalleled scope of high-value domain options, providing access to domain names and curation technologies not available elsewhere. Media Options believes in the power of a great domain name and is dedicated to helping you obtain yours. Call or email today to put a domain to work for you.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast last night and someone else made an analogy about energy and gold because it takes so much energy to mine gold out of the earth. And so they were saying gold is almost like a store of energy. You know, it's a store of work.
Oh, here we go.
That's precisely right.
Yeah,
so you're about to get Drew going on me, like literally his entire thesis as to the value of Bitcoin. No, I mean, and there's a documentary done by the Swan Bitcoin folks called This Machine Greens, which is on YouTube. And it's like 30-minute. Is it a 30-minute video, Drew?
You know, something like that. Yeah, it's great documentary. But just to put a cap on what you just said, it's precisely right. Ultimately, as with most commodities, the price of gold is, you know, tethered to the cost of replacement, right? And so how much does it cost, which is primarily an energy constraint, to get new gold out of the ground to add to the supply? And the fundamental difference between gold, and I love gold. I love gold. I love gold and I love Bitcoin.
And
gold. I love Bitcoin.
I'm not, you know, against gold because I want to be, you know, ultimately pro, you know, Bitcoin. But the difference, which is quite fundamental, is that there is no supply constraint on gold. We know that there is a vast ocean of gold in the Earth's crust. It's just very expensive to pull it out. Just like we know that there is more oil than we will use in the next 10,000 years of human existence, even if we continuously ramp up our energy consumption and we double our population, it's just very expensive to go get it and to pull it out of the ground, send it through pipelines, right? Like all of this is very expensive. And the difference is that no matter what the price of Bitcoin is, you cannot increase the supply. And gold, right? Gold is now roughly $3,000 an ounce. I expect that the price will keep going up. I don't know exactly where those tipping points are in energy prices and in increasing gold supply. But I do know that, like, let's say that, I don't know, let's say the price of gold doubles. If gold is suddenly $5,000 or $6,000 per ounce, I can promise you, we already know, I don't know, you don't know, but there are people in the domain in the gold business that know exactly where they can go pull, you know, a few thousand kilos of gold out of the ground once the price makes sense to pull it out of the ground. I remember when, you know, oil was trading at $35 a barrel. And, you know, Petrobras made this. Petrobras is the largest oil company in Brazil, one of the largest oil companies in the world. And they made this massive discovery offshore. It was the largest oil reserve that had been discovered to date. This is back in probably 05, 08, something like that. And I invested in Petrobras just naively and stupidly. Number one, I didn't understand the corruption involved. But number two, and more importantly, is I didn't understand the cost to pull that oil out of the ocean that was like 5 miles or 11 miles or something under the ocean, you know, deep in the earth. And, you know, in order to actually make it make sense to go get that oil, the price of oil needed to get to like $80 or $100 a barrel, right? And so gold is constrained only up to the point that price doesn't allow for us to increase supply.
Yeah. Though some would argue that is a feature because it makes it more suitable.
Elasticity for money. Yeah.
Because the thing with Bitcoin is if we use it as a currency, it would cause all prices to go down like every over time because it's so supply limited. Like it would just cause some sort of deflation. Whereas gold, as your economy grows, you can dig more of it out of the ground, so there's more supply. So so I see Bitcoin more as an asset.
And we could debate that point you just made for at least an hour. I will save you that argument. But you know, I hear what you're saying. That elasticity of money is important, but I don't think it's important that your base layer asset. Nobody's going to buy their milk at any point now or in the future with any amount of gold. You're not taking your little speck of gold to go buy your eggs and your milk. It's not happening. It's a base layer asset, and then we create credit on top of it, and that credit is infinitely elastic, constrained only by economic conditions. And so I don't, you know, I don't put a lot of stock in that argument, but it is interesting. I love this vein of conversation. Anyways,
well,
back to Dimadot.
Yeah, we're going to shut that.
Now just announced that they're going to have, you know, right here on Domain Sherpa, they're going to have a Bitcoin treasury. Welcome to the club.
Which is very exciting. Congratulations, guys. So let's bring it back because we have about 10, 15 minutes and, you know, I do want to recenter this. So, we talked about some of the current things and, you know, exciting stuff for, you know, really some of the great things about your feature set. So where do you see the rest of this year? Do you have things on the roadmap that you're excited about? And generally speaking, what are we looking forward to, you know, in this next 12, 24 months for you guys?
Well, I'll mention one thing we have we recently launched a new bring your own lead feature. Mm-hmm. So Let's say you've already made the deal, right? So you don't need the marketplace anymore. If you just want the transaction, like someone to process the credit card, process the Alipay, whatever currency, we support like 13 currencies. We have a bring your own lead feature. We launched it maybe 3 months ago. It's doing really well, very popular. We charge 5%, which covers the credit card fees and stuff for us, you know. And once we add the BTC server, and we can accept direct crypto without going through BitPay, we'll probably even lower that commission even, you know. So
very cool.
Very that's cool. All right, Jacqueline, what about you? And what's on your sort of?
Yeah, I think this year we're definitely going to be expanding our aftermarket features. So there'll be some exciting launches here in the next month or so that we'll be able to announce here soon. We're also, our team's focusing on adding more CC TLDs as we expand our TLD offering. So recently, I think we've added probably like 20 or 30.
Yeah, I've been seeing you guys like it's like almost weekly. Todd's like, oh yeah, we just added, you know, some obscure country I never heard of. And here's another one. And it's like, oh wow, okay.
Yeah,
it was funny. I don't remember what it was. You announced one like a week or two ago, and I was just like, oh wow, that's actually kind of a cool domain extension, but I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah, so we're rolling the train on that still. We try to direct connect to every central registry to kind of cut out the middleman and keep the prices low. And so there's some big CCTLDs that we're going to be launching this year. So that'll continue to grow.
I think that's a great strategy. Just, you know, sort of, again, some of my, let's say, macroeconomic thesis. You know, in a world that seems to be shattering, you know, meaning splintering, like multipolar, you know, you're going to have different centers of power, you're going to have, you know, different centers of economics and those types of relationships. I actually think that CCTLDs are going to be pretty big growth area for domain names as countries start looking more, you know, within. And then you've got multinational companies that are trying to stand up presences that are local presences with some of the nuance of local presence, as opposed to sort of just here's our one international presence and you know, maybe we've just got some local language functionality. But I'm pretty bullish, and we're seeing that with some of our clients that are asking us to go out and, you know, acquire CCTLDs for their brands. And where we've been working with these people for years and that was never really a priority, CCTLDs are, I would say, increasingly becoming a point of, let's say, discussion, point of priority.
Yeah. And there's only 120 countries, right? So they are somewhat limited.
There's 193 countries in the United Nations, right? I think, or 191.
Yeah, that have CCTLDs. Is that what it is?
Yeah. I don't know how that maps onto CCTLDs.
They should each have one. I may have misremembered. Maybe it's 190. But that's still somewhat limited compared to new GTLDs, which is another round coming up. You know, there may be, who knows, 1,000 more, you know.
I expect more. I think we had 1,200 in the last round. And I think this round will be pretty, pretty big. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think you're going to see several thousand.
But yeah, most recently, you mentioned .ad, I think, was one. .ml was another one. Last two. And
oh man, that one's so interesting. Like, I checked their zone size, like they only have 5,000 registrations before we launched it. So
I saw that. I was in the car when you tweeted that. That's the one I was thinking about, you know, that I mentioned earlier. And I saw that and I was like, oh wow, there's got to be some great domain hacks there. .ad, and there's only 5,000 domains in the zone. I was like, when I get home, I'm gonna go, you know, go house on .ad. And then I was like, yeah, I don't need to do that anymore. But
I don't guess myself, but I was watching the registrations and people were getting like single word domains, three letter domains, like amazing stuff. There was amazing stuff in the first few days. Like, I think we actually grew their zone by 1,000, actually.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You guys single handedly helped grow the zone by 30%.
One tweet.
Actually doubled it. You doubled it if it was only 500 or something, right?
That'd be a good marketing program, Jacqueline, is you should have a grow the zone.
Grow the zone.
Grow the zone. Work out some marketing deal with these countries where you guys are going to promote the CCTLD and grow the zone. You know, that goes straight to their bottom line. I'm talking about passive income from these countries.
Yeah, it's been interesting onboarding with these CCTLDs because a lot of times you're working with the local government. And so that's why a lot of registrars don't offer these TLDs because it's not your basic, you know, connect to central NIC backend and turn it on. It's sometimes it's paperwork that's actually like physical paper that needs to be sent via mail.
We've done a handful. We've done a bunch of CCTLD deals in the last like 2 or 3 months that have required like that the deal was the easy part, right? Getting an agreement for price and domain, but then getting the transfer to take place and then having to handhold and like do all that kind of stuff. And we're not, you know, we end up in the role of having to play like the technical sort of, you know, liaison to help them get this name, filling out forms and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. So it's like, you know, it gets involved. I love the idea of that as a marketing campaign to grow the zone. Like, hey, .ml, if you want to participate in the Dyna.grow the zone program, we'll do this, that, and the other. We'll tweet about it. Todd will tweet, you know, and we'll look the whole idea of like grow the zone. I think that's awesome. I love it.
You heard it here first.
Heard it here first. And the main server, we're all little tweeting domains. No, that is like super, super cool. So, all right. Well, look, we're almost running out of time. So what we'll typically do, we'll go around the horn and then, like I say, you know, we allow our guests to talk about or promote anything that we have not already covered. I'll start with Drew to get him out of the way and let him, you know, in case he's going to rant about something now for the next 30 minutes. But I'm just.
No, kidding. I you know. Great conversation. I'm glad we finally got you guys on, and I'm really grateful that you did. And I truly appreciate the way that you've built this business, Todd and Jacqueline. And you know, it's my kind of company. I you know, grassroots, bootstraps, and you know, just building something real, something that you actually care about, and building it the way that you want it to run. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. And you know, I think a lot of people you know, just from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that get really caught up in the mindset of like, okay, I have this idea, and so I'm gonna immediately go out and I'm gonna raise venture capital, or I'm gonna immediately take some debt. You know, I'm going to go build this thing. And I don't believe personally. I think that makes sense if you're trying to build the next big, you know, AI LLM, or you're trying to build, you know, a car manufacturing business. You're trying to build something that's extremely capital intensive. But if you've got an idea to address a problem, you know, I don't know. I just think that building a business, you know, wearing a bunch of hats and working 18 hours a day, you know, for a couple of years and really understanding the market, understanding what your customers really want, understanding if there's really a business there, and then building it, you know, organically. I think that the moat you can build around that business is the way that you're building the business, as opposed to, you know, having a gun to your head and, you know, just trying to do whatever it is, often at the cost and expense of your customer, to grow your business 30% month over month, or whatever that metric might be that you've, you know, assigned. And I don't think that's a healthy way to grow most businesses. There are businesses where that makes perfect sense because it's capital intensive, because it's a brand new idea. You need to get to market first. You need to grow and scale first. I understand it completely. And those are many of our customers. But I also think that it is very underappreciated. And the entrepreneurs that do so, like you, should be recognized and appreciated for building this business organically from the ground up, listening to their customers' needs, and you know, being, you know, laser focused on just addressing those customer needs. It literally, I will say it because you can't, but it is the antithesis of, you know, a company like GoDaddy that is, you know, trying to grow at any cost, 100% at the expense of their customers. And I love many of the people that work at GoDaddy. I've been a customer of GoDaddy since the beginning. I owe a lot to GoDaddy, and I continue to work with them. And I appreciate their sales team. I appreciate, you know, the executive team. I appreciate everybody there. But as an organization, I think that you are the opposite. You being Dynadot are the opposite of that. And you guys are listening loud and clear to what your customers want and what the domain community wants and needs. And you're addressing those concerns. And so I salute you. And I hope that
you didn't even have to pay extra for that endorsement. Success. You know what I mean? That was completely...
I feel so hyped.
No, listen, honestly,
that's like a gift bag that you sure take home from the show.
Literally, that comes from the heart. And I truly, this is actually one of the things, is one of my pet peeves. I hate fake. I hate the fake economy. I hate fake businesses. I hate watching people making money on some narrative and Fugazi where the business doesn't make money, but somehow they're making money because they're somehow skimming venture money. You know, I'm tired of that stuff. I'm sort of glad to see the tide going out on it. And I truly, truly, I have immense respect and appreciation for people that build businesses as you have done, as I have tried to do, but you've done it better. Yeah, hats off.
Wow. Thank you so
much. And, you know, so it's funny, I'll throw my own little anecdote on that same kind of thing. When a company that I came up working with, we were cash-based business and what we do now. And so obviously we were very protective of our cash and our cash flow. And we were having a conversation with a potential partner or acquirer who was a publicly traded company. And we were talking about a competitor of ours and how they book, you know, the revenue numbers based on this, you know, sort of the, you know, like marketing spend, right? Of which they were taking just a small fraction as to the actual, like, you know, sort of revenue and even less as a profit. And I remember saying, yeah, you know, ha, it's like the way they do that is so kind of fake. And, you know, it sort of puffs it all up as if it's a lot more than it actually is. And, you know, publicly traded, you know, executive was looking at me like I had 10 heads, like that I didn't get it, you know? And he's like, well, that's, what do you mean? That's great that they're doing that. You know what I mean? And I was like, I just don't vibe like that. I don't know. Maybe I'm old school. But again, that's just kind of how we operate. And I do think it's important. And I think it does provide you guys with an advantage to allow you to operate, you know, because being customer centric means more than just saying that you are. It means actually being that and, you know, and growing and thriving, surviving, you know, based on being able to actually deliver real value to your customers, you know, has to come from delivering value to your customers. It sounds like it's common sense, but, you know, you can't just because you say it doesn't make it true. You have to actually walk the walk. So, or walk the talk. Anyway, so with that, that's us telling you guys how much we appreciate y'all, you know, but yes, wow. Let's go ahead and give you guys a couple of minutes. So what else? I know that, so the domain pricing, any promos, you know, that kind of stuff, the domain pricing where everybody now pays the same sort of discounted pricing that's in place for a period of time. Is that indefinite? Talk to us about that. Talk to us about anything else you want to talk about. And then, so the floor is yours for these last couple of minutes.
Yeah, our domain pricing is indefinite. So we get our best Dynadot pricing regardless of how much you spend. We do have our spending tiers where you get benefits like an account manager, for example, or access to our appraisal tool. Those numbers are based on spending. But as far as pricing, that's a flat rate across the board. We've got .com on sale for $8.99 right now for your registration. So Drew, when you move over your portfolio, you can get some deals on some .com domains.
All right.
And then lastly, I just want to give a shout out to our team. You know, you'll see Todd at the forefront and you might see me and a few others at the conferences, but the Dynadot team is the magic behind it all. They work really hard and they actually care about creating a really good product. And so want to give a shout out to our Dynadot team because they make the magic happen here.
That's awesome. Todd? Anything with you before we go?
Yeah, I just want to tell a story of my daily life, which is basically half my time is on calls with various partners. And I oftentimes ask them, like, what's important to you guys? What's important to your management? And most of the time people say, you know, top line. They want revenue, or they say EBITDA, you know, they want earnings. Yeah. I just always think to myself, that's so different from my answer, which is to build good products, to keep our customers happy, and to build a good team. Like, that's the most important thing to me. And so I think that kind of maybe explains some of what you guys are seeing, you know, in the product and stuff. The other thing I'll mention is that I think we grew really fast in the last 5 years. And so I don't think people realize like how big we are. We're actually the number 5 registrar in the world now by DUMS. I think
DUMS being domain under management for all you DUMS out there.
DUMS, yeah.
Too much lingo, sorry. And then
or DNOMS, domain names under management. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're growing, we'll probably hit 10 million in the next few years in registrations under management. We're voted a favorite registrar by NamePros for the last 5 years. So I think we've built up some good momentum. I'm excited for the company. And I hope you guys, if you haven't yet, give us a try.
All right. Well, that's it then. And so like I said, we got to move some names over. That'll be a conversation. We're going to talk offline regardless about a couple of different things.
You don't have to answer this question, but I am curious. You know, we talked earlier about, domain names, domain registrations let's say the inception part of the domain lifecycle is not very profitable, very tight margins, 4-8%. What area of the domain lifecycle or what domain service is profitable? What is the most profitable area of operation in the domain space for you guys? And again, if that's sort of a secret sauce, you don't want to talk about it, no problem. I'm just curious.
Oh yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. we have expired auctions, and that brings in a good amount of money. There's some resistance to auctions from our customers. They say like, hey, you're profiting off me not renewing. And I can
classic see argument.
Yeah. On the other hand, I say if we don't do it, then the drop catchers make that money.
Exactly. It's just going to go to drop catch, or it's going to go to name jet, or it's going to go to snap, or.
Exactly. So someone's going to make that money. It's a hard argument to make when they're pissed off.
Yeah. Well, I think they're only, here's the thing. And I've been on that side of it, right? I mean, this is, I think that you guys, and I know for a fact, give your, registrants that grace period to renew right after the name expires. Yeah. So it's like they have that amount of time. It's in your terms and conditions. It's very clear. Before then the name goes off to auction, which is how we would typically do it at the registrars that we would have when I was running NameJet. So, I think that is just it's unfortunately you get people, I didn't mean in my credit card, this, that, or the other, and those are, it's like occasionally you get those kinds of things. But if you manage your stuff responsibly, then you won't miss those kinds of deadlines, right? And I think that to your point, if you guys were not going to have an expiry, it wouldn't give them an opportunity to get a name back once it reaches the certain point when you guys would have to delete it anyway. So that really it's like, yes, it's uncomfortable in a way to have that conversation with a customer when they're angry. But I do think that just common sense kind of puts you guys in the right place. I
100%.
Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir here, but yeah.
Well, I think it's actually part of the argument that people get lost on is that, it's in the customer's best interest that domain name is retained by the platform for as long as possible under whichever circumstance, whether it's in auction, whether it's in the grace period, whether it has sold and it's in somebody else's account. Maybe it becomes impossible to seek recovery if you inadvertently lost a name and there's a legitimate reason. But the longer the domain is retained by the original platform, the better the chances are of, some kind of arbitration or discussion or solution being found. Once the domain, if that domain goes to drop catch, like, sorry, you're shit out of luck and there's nothing you can
that's
do.
That's a good point. And not only that, but I'll actually take it a step further. If it goes into the drop and it gets picked up by someone, not even call it a publicly accessible platform for the drop, then you have even less opportunity to try to get back. Where if it stays, if it goes to an expired auction for a period of time, so how long do your expired auctions last, like when a name goes?
Seven days.
So it's 7 days. So in those 7 days, they still have an opportunity to recover it there because they know where to find it and how to get it. And if it gets dropped and then it ends up with drop catch, okay, you have an opportunity to drop catch. But it's also, there are plenty of drop catchers that don't put the names into auction and then, plug them away into their own portfolios and things where, again, you're kind of very much to Drew's point, I think this is a good one, is that, you know, the longer that it stays available one way or the other, at least you still have an opportunity to try to get it.
And look, last point, and then we can go, is also on that point, like, you guys aren't warehousing domains, right? You're like, Network Solutions, warehousing domains. Everybody.
I don't know. Basically. I mean, that's alleged. I don't know.
Come on. I don't know. Everybody. GoDaddy's warehousing names. Everybody is warehousing names, and you guys aren't. And so, you know, I think you're on the right side of this. I think you're giving the customer the best opportunity available, given the circumstances that they are. I don't think there's really a valid complaint there.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You guys aren't a nonprofit, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to be able to exist.
One of the first tenets of Charlie Tuna is, you know, I am not Mother Teresa. That's not what I'm here for.
Yeah. But you guys to be able to continue to provide the pricing that you do on .coms, the service that you provide, the continued features and functionality and the development of all that kind of stuff for the betterment of your customers, it's like, it's all part of the whole pie. It's the holistic whole, right? So,
yeah.
No, I think it's all good. You guys are doing great. So, all right. Well, with that, we're going to go ahead. We went over time.
Let me mention one other thing that we make money is on the shelf space for the search, like which TLDs rank and stuff.
Oh, okay.
All registrars do that. And I do want to mention, we try really hard to help people renew. We have auto renew built in. We send like 7 emails to people. We have an app with notifications. So we really try to make it easy for people to renew.
Dude, when I was at the registrar, keep in mind, I was on the legal team for Network Solutions. So, and I dealt with a lot of our customer complaints and the consumer law kind of related stuff. Yeah. And people, it was, you know, you deal with, I didn't renew my name and then it went into auction and now I'm complaining. And it's like, okay, well, what about all the renewal notices that you got? Oh, well, you guys were spamming me. So
to be fair, Network Solutions does the exact opposite of that. I thought, you know, like, shout out.
I'm just Network saying Solutions, as an example on the registrar side. On the registrar side, I'm saying that I got too many emails, so I basically click spam, you know, and it's like, all right, well, I mean,
that's on you.
But I can tell you, what I can tell you with NetSol, you know, and to their credit, you know, they wouldn't want names to expire. They want the customers to renew the names. Like, that's their ultimate goal, is to keep the name renewing indefinitely, right? That's the goal.
You know what? I want to say one point. I used to love, I don't think they still do it, but Network Solutions used to just send a check for, like, so domains expired, you know, and they, I don't know what the split was. I think it was 50-50, but whatever the name would sell for in auction, they would just send you a check.
Some registrars would do that up until a certain point, and then they said, why are we sending the checks?
Yeah, why are we sending the check? Yeah.
So, and nor should, I mean, look, that's a whole different deal. That's a value add that a registrar can offer to make them more attractive for having your domains there. Fabulous used to do that, you know, even after NetSol stopped doing that and that kind of thing. So, you know, those are business decisions based on what makes them, you know, and balancing all of those things. But anyway,
make a lot of financial sense, but it was a nice feature.
Sure. Well, no. And again, there were, like, Fabulous continued to do that for a while, and deliberately to make it, you know, more attractive for domainers to keep their portfolios there so that they can then let, you know, some names. I mean, they had some guys who would let the names expire, go off for a while, see which ones got auctioned.
Well, that's just it. Sometimes it might actually just be more lucrative to just let some of the smaller names expire, let them go to auction, let the market, you know, put a price on it, and then, you know, collect half.
Well, because then there's also the mentality, too, where names that would go to expired auctions would get higher prices than names that were in third-party lister driven auctions. So, like, you know, instead of, if somebody would list a name for auction just as themselves, even without a reserve. Now, no reserves would always typically do better than reserve auctions, provided that they had the same amount of eyeballs. But people would generally just spend more money on the expiring domains because they felt it was a cleaner, hey, this isn't some domainer trying to sell names in auction or whatever. They felt like, oh, this is an opportunity. And even in the drop, even more so. You know, when we would run like those, you know, we would do a whole bunch of price, you know, sort of like, you know, running the numbers to see the reporting on what that would look like. And the expired auctions would drive just more activity because there was this thought that, oh, that name just has more value because it's now free and the, you know, it's off the reservation as opposed to, you know, it being sold by someone. And So, you know, there was definitely some value in just letting it flow through the expiry, because you might actually maximize the value of selling that name in auction if you were to otherwise want to get rid of it anyway. So, yeah. So anyway, look, we could sit here, obviously, and talk for a lot longer about a lot more things. We've covered a lot of ground. This has been fantastic. Thank you guys so much. First of all, thank you, Drew, as always, co-host slash guest. Todd and Jacqueline, thank you guys so much. I'm glad we finally got you on the show. This was awesome. As we kind of sang your praises throughout the show, we're very excited about, you know, what we see you guys doing in the space. Excited to be more of a customer going forward. So we'll talk about that. But really, you know, just again, the way you guys do what you do, it's something the space needs, and we're excited to see it, and you know, and very happy to have you guys on here to help kind of continue to just put it out there in the universe as you do what you do. And I'll see you guys. Well, I see both of you at ICANN in Seattle. I know, Jacqueline, you said you're going to be there. Todd, will you be in Seattle as well?
Yes, I will.
Well, then I'll see you guys then. And to the audience, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. I say it on every show. Without you, there is no us. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll post this on the Domain Sherpa site, as we do, with some other info in the show notes. But, you know, reach out to, so I guess for customers and that kind of thing, just dynadot.com, hit you guys on Twitter, right? I mean, it's, you're not hard to find, get you with the good, the bad, the ugly, all that kind of stuff, right? I mean, so,
yep.
All right. So that is what it is. You can do the same for us, although they'll probably be more receptive than we will to the constructive and criticism. But anybody that has any issues with the show, just hit us up for a refund for what you paid to listen, and we'll get that right out to you. As I also say on every show. But otherwise, we will see everybody next time here on Domain Sherpa, where all roads lead to domains. Take care, everybody. See you soon.
Bye.